are you?
I'm Mark de Clive Lowe. I'm a half New Zealand, half Japanese musician and producer, composer. I live in LA now.
So you do. And one of the things that come up first when mentioning your name is how you go all across the board in music, which is kind of significant when it's related to your traveling and having a very interesting background, being half and half, and lots of cultural influence in the mix. And you've been on records with techno greats like Theo Parrish, Dave Angel. You've been making Broken Beat with Bembe Segre. Is that how you say the name? And you meddle quite a lot in Soulful House as well. And the past few years, you went back to your roots a bit. As a jazz musician, you started playing jazz keys, and you recorded and released some records with the Rotterdam Jazz Orchestra, with some releases on True Thoughts, the British label. This may be a generalization, but my impression is that many musicians focus very hard in one field, like one genre, just to make it, or they feel maybe a need to make a choice. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, like you're saying, I grew up with a pretty mixed background. And I think even, you know, not even thinking about music, when it came to my cultural background and how that fit into a social context in New Zealand, I didn't really feel comfortable. There weren't many half Asian kids at school. And I mean, now New Zealand's a much more kind of mixed melting pot culturally. But then, you know, early 80s, it was not so much like that. Yeah, so for me growing up in New Zealand, it was about trying to find out how I fit in a social context and a personal context. So I feel like when it came to music, it was kind of similar. Growing up, I aspired to be, firstly, I aspired to be Teddy Riley. You know, I was really into early New Jack Swing and Native Tongues hip hop. And then when it turned into jazz, I aspired to live in New York and play with Art Blakey and Betty Carter and Branford Marsalis, like jazz greats. But like none of that really made sense to me. Like I was aspiring to things that were, in, like their paradigm already existed. But I felt like for me and my truth, it wasn't what I was going to be. And I ended up, you know, falling in love with so many things. And, you know, jungle was a huge turning point for me when I first heard jungle. The musicality, but the kind of the dirty club vibe of it was, the combination of those things was really inspiring. You know, I ended up, you know, chasing a girl to London, and I never wanted to live in London, but this girl went to the UK, so I chased her, and I ended up, you know, meeting so many great people there, from like Dave Angel to the whole Broken Beat crew.
Can I just ask, because moving to London seems from the outside like quite a smart move if you're a musician and you're living in a relatively musically unknown country as New Zealand, but that wasn't in the back of your mind, it was more for personal reasons.
It was totally for personal reasons, and I wanted to move to New York at that point. And that year I actually traveled the world, and I spent time in Cuba, New York, San Fran, London, Paris, Tokyo, all over the place. And they were all great places, but it was London where I found it really resonated with me. And like when I met all these people, I found that as a musician, I had something to contribute to them, and they had plenty to teach that I could learn from them as well. Also, the kind of music that was being made, you know, I was aspiring to, you know, a lot of music that I'd already heard. But then when I met all these people, they were making music that was, I guess, stuff I had dreamed of, but I hadn't imagined actually existed. You know, Bugs in the Attic, IG Culture, 4Hero. You know, they were taking the history and recontextualizing it and moving it forward in their own way.
Yeah, and that's also a kind of music that has a lot of influences.
Yeah, yeah. And it's in that crew, in the West London crew particularly, you know, you had, I mean, 4Hero alone were coming from, you know, rave music, jungle, drum and bass, hip-hop. IG Culture was coming from dub roots and reggae. Phil Asher was coming from a house background, and Boogie, Bugs in the Attic, were coming from Boogie and Soul and Funk. So there were all these elements, and they came together, and we were making this music where it wasn't about, you know, what tempo is it, what BPM is it. It was just music. And like, you'd make one track, and then the next track, you'd purposely make something different because you just made the last track. Whereas in a lot of electronic music and club music genres, it was all about repeating the same formula. You know, the same BPM, the same elements, and you know, like reggaeton's a good extreme example of that. It's the same drum beat with the same drum sounds, you know. And it wasn't about that for us. It was about a freedom of expression. And I think there was something in that for me which I related to growing up as an aspiring jazz musician. There was a freedom of expression in that, and a real adventurousness in that. Like, you, I never knew each day I'd wake up, I never knew what we were going to make that day. It was like, by the time I go to bed today, there'll be some new music that never existed before, and it's new, like it's fresh. That was a really exciting time for me.
Yeah, and I also get the idea that being in an environment like that, from my own experience as well, is that it kind of awakens roots that you would not have run into unless you have actually put yourself in that particular context. What are your thoughts about this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, it's when we meet those inspiring situations and inspiring people that really does, you know, awaken something in us to express our own creativity, and also to be surrounded by the best people you possibly can. I mean, I often, you know, analogize it to sports where, you know, if you're playing tennis, you got to play with someone better than you, or you're not going to step your game up. It's the same kind of thing. It was interesting for me, you know, especially growing up playing piano all my life and really aspiring in that area. When I was in the UK, I was the anti-jazz. Like, I didn't play piano for 10 years, like acoustic piano. And producers would be like, let's put some piano on this track. Like, nah, let's just put synths on there. Or someone would call me and be like, let's do a trio gig. Like, nah, not just DJ, you know, kind of thing. And it was interesting because it was such an inspiring environment and time for me, and I learned so much. At the same time, I was kind of consciously wanting to deconstruct the musician that I'd grown up as.
For what reason did you want to do that?
I think it was just a natural kind of pathway of rebellion and growth and searching, you know, trying to find myself. You know, I did feel like as a jazz musician, a lot of people emulate records of the past, and very few contemporary musicians had their own voice. So I didn't know consciously at the time, but this was how I found my voice. You know, I literally completely turned my back on that music for a decade. And it wasn't until I was living in LA, and a great singer-songwriter, Nia Andrews, had me play on her debut show, and she insisted that I play acoustic piano. I was like, no, I'm not going to play piano. It's not going to happen. And it was her gig, and she said, you're playing piano. So I played piano. It was a nice grand piano. And it was amazing. It was like after 10 years, I really reconnected with this instrument that I'd grown up playing and started a whole new appreciation for it. I feel also that living in America, where, you know, jazz is much more part of the history and the fabric of the music culture there, I felt kind of invited back into it. At the same time, by coming back to it after 10 years of running away from it, I heard it differently, I played differently, and I, you know, I found a voice to contribute.
I have the idea that it has to do with some kind of innate confidence as well, to throw yourself into projects where you're not totally in control, or you're not 100% sure of what you're doing or where you're going to end up. Does this resonate with your perspective?
Do you mean as a, like, playing or?
Well, in the way that you said that you, when you moved to London, that you came from a musician's perspective,
right?
And you jumped right into the club scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was still about how, it was always about being musical and how to bring the musicianship. You know, London was about how to balance the musicianship and the club music, and where does that meet? And for me, at that time, it was all about integrating it on a really concise level so that, And for example, when I look back on acid jazz, to me, that music was, it was great for its time. But largely where the musicians were involved, it was about, you know, having beats and a loop and a musician playing a sax solo over the top or something. So to me, that wasn't very integrated. It was more aesthetic. And then in the late 90s and early 2000s, when I was in London, it was much more integrated. It was the time where the musician became the producer, and that kind of, there was a very, the boundary between musician and producer became blurred. So for me, that was where I really learned that whole craft. I did enjoy, what really brought the jazz side back out was when I was doing my live shows, and I'd have the drum machine and have everything pre-programmed. I did a show in Hungary maybe 10 years ago now, and we ran out of material for the show. We played everything, and then they wanted an encore, but we played everything, and the promoter insisted that we do an encore, and I had nothing more prepared. So we got on stage, and I looked at the drum machine, and I thought, well, I better make a beat. So I put the drum machine into record mode and just made a beat. And that was a really interesting moment for me, because it reminded me of the spontaneity and creativity of being a jazz musician, just creating in the moment. So that was actually a huge turning point for me, which brought me back to the element of risk and musicianship and how to integrate that into an electronic context.
Yeah, that's actually, I saw an interview with an American journalist, who you were telling him about this concert where you were playing, right. and this happened. And I wanted to ask a little more about, in general, how much of your creativity is sparked by this risk-taking, by taking chances and not staying in your safe zone. Because my impression is that you have taken quite a lot of risk. You have moved around. You have got your feet wet in different areas of music.
I mean, it's all about the risk. That's all I care about. And I feel like that's the moment where you can feel alive in anything is where there's that moment of risk. When I see someone else perform, if there's no element of risk, I don't care how good it sounds. It's so boring to me. And part of when this kind of, when that turning point happened with me, I was also going to see other people's shows, and they'd be trying to perform their album like note perfect, and they'd achieve it often, but it was impressive from a technical point of view, but from a substance point of view, it didn't do much for me. And so when I collaborate with people, especially in a live setting, all I care about is the risk. Like the execution has to be there, the ability has to be there, the experience which makes them a great musician has to be there. But in that moment, like I keep telling people, it's like we're going to jump off the cliff without a parachute, and you got to believe you can fly. It's the only choice. And that's where great music happens to me. You know, even if I'm in the studio and I'm composing, it's all about bringing the risk element into that. It's like, let me try something I wouldn't do. You know, I don't know what it's about to be, but let me at least risk that.
Well, traditionally, the difference between making music in the studio and live performance is exactly that of risk. That when you're playing live, you're interacting with the other musicians, you're interacting with the audience.
Yeah.
But you're saying that you're using this element of improvisation and risk-taking even when you're making beats by yourself in the studio.
Absolutely. I mean, there has to be, like, the recording studio for me is about capturing a moment. And the beauty of that is you can catch the moment and then you can kind of massage the moment and shape it or whatever. But the moment, like, I used to be that guy, traditional kind of beat producer, where you'd spend hours trying to make the beat perfect and trying to find the answer, basically, to the question through minute detail. But now it's been kind of a marriage of the live situation with the studio situation, where, say, if I'm doing a remix, then the way it comes out is the way it comes out. And to me, there's an integrity in that, where it's being honest to the moment.
I'd like us to listen to a few tracks that have inspired you, by artists that have inspired you. I didn't really prepare you for this question.
Okay, one thing I was actually listening to it today on the way in from the airport is an Ornette Coleman tune called Lonely Woman. And it's like a late 50s recording. And Ornette Coleman was an avant-garde free jazz sax player. Well, he's still alive. But it's amazing because at the time the music was very avant-garde, but now it doesn't feel as crazy. I guess we have more context looking back in history. But I love how he was all about creating melody and harmonic movement without predefinition. And for me, that's what it's all about. And there's a lot of what I do, especially in the more electronic context, which I like to apply a lot of the same concepts, where it's creating harmonies out of moments and textures instead of creating them out of theory. And I love that. There's a whole science of chaos, which for me, Ornette Coleman was a progenitor of. So yeah, Lonely Woman, and I love how it's, the drums hold a real strong rhythm, but the melody floats over the top. And it's kind of something proto, kind of jungle about that too.
Okay, so I'd like to go back a little to your songwriting process. Since you are a musician and you're working with other musicians in a band, and then you also work by yourself in the studio, in what ways do these different methods of creating music differ for you?
Well, I often, well, especially the way I like to work now, I'll write compositions and I'll sketch them out in the studio and I'll write a chart for it. And then if we're in a studio with the band recording or doing a show, then basically I'm giving them a sketch and an outline. What's very important to me with all the musicians I work with is that they bring their personality to the music. So it's, you could have a technically great musician who executes every note correctly, and but if they're not bringing their life and their story to the music, then I don't really care. So for me, there's a lot of, I like to give the musicians a lot of freedom. And I do find a lot of the guys I work with that there's two things they really appreciate. One is that what I'm doing is different, so they get to play some different music. So that's fun for them. And then secondly, is they get to be themselves. And that's not, you know, that may sound like a trivial thing, but it's huge. Like in so many musical contexts where a musician gets hired to play in a band, he's not being hired to be himself.
So you're not being the James Brown of soul or Broken Beat? And
not at all. I mean, if something's wrong, I'm pretty cold. But, you know, I book people because I know them already, or I know their musicality in such a way that I'm curious to what they're going to bring. Like we did a show in LA recently where I had Harvey Mason on drums and Freddie Washington on bass. And, you know, they're legendary 70s cats. And it's not like I'm going to sit there and talk to them about the aesthetics of electronic music and, you know, how I like to program drums. Or it was just music. And I was curious to see what are they going to bring to it. And it was a beautiful thing.
And the way that you project yourself as an artist, I also get the impression that you're not so much the cliche idea of an artist as an introvert and, you know, sitting by yourself, being a control freak, etc. You're more outward and social in the way that you're both creating together with other people all the time, collaborating. And also you're very present on the net with Instagram and right. Various home pages.
Well, I mean, firstly, I am something of a control freak. And like the way I set up my own shows, especially on stage and in the studio, I have complete control over everything. Like, because I'm the way I'll program beats, I'll be sampling the musicians, I'll be shaping everything. So no one has more control on stage than me. So maybe that is a reflection of something of a control freak in me. But at the same time, I do more than ever now, and maybe this is a maturity and age thing, I do appreciate other musicians bringing themselves to what I'm doing. And then as far as the internet goes, I think it's an amazing time. I mean, you know, fans can reach out directly. I can reach them directly. And, you know, I just think it's a really cool thing. It's a very strange industry right now. No one quite knows how it works. There's no one way to do stuff. You know, there's no rules in a way. There's a million ways to do it. And I'm just grateful to have the opportunity to do what I do what I love, and I can try new things. And that's really fun. So I think the whole internet format is a good, a big part of allowing that to happen.
Do you ever struggle with this paradox between being extrovert and communicating versus being creative and a little more introvert? How do you handle that balance?
Well, when I'm being more introverted or focusedly creative, creatively focused, you just won't see me posting stuff. I mean, it just won't be happening. It's impossible. I mean, there's no way that in a moment of real creativity, there's no way I'm going to take an Instagram photo. It's just not possible. And at the same time, especially if I'm watching someone else's show and I'm really digging it, there may be a moment where I think, oh, let me share this with people. But then I'll make sure I'm, back engaged in the music. I definitely do have times when it's more focused. And I mean, I've just finished mixing down the new record for my Club Night Church. And there were aspects of that which I would have loved to document and share, but I was busy, as I only have two arms.
Right. So let's listen to the next song that you would like to share with us.
Okay, so let's... where should we go? Well, Herbie Hancock is a huge influence to me. And Herbie, along with Miles Davis, the two of them kind of shaped genres and shifts in genre many times over. And what Herbie did through his jazz years and then his funk years and then through hip-hop was pretty amazing. So let's check out a joint from his album Manchild. Hang Up Your Hang-Ups. I'm not afraid to
Go back and talk a little more about this switching between roles, since we were talking about how you have been doing loads of different things and in your music career. You're a musician, you're a producer, you're a composer, you even work as a DJ and other stuff as well. Is there one of these roles where you feel more rooted or more at home?
You know what, they all provide, you know, pleasure and creative satisfaction on different levels. I mean, I love situations, you know, like here. I'm touring with Maeli and his project. You know, it's his band, especially because it's a trio. Each one of us gets to bring a lot to it. So there's a lot of freedom for me. But ultimately, the responsibility is his. You know, his name is on the gig. And I don't do many gigs as a sideman, but I do really enjoy that at the moment when it's the right kind of thing. When I do a solo live club set, you know, that's great fun because it's full, you know, it's full dance floor, on-the-fly production, and it's a very visceral interaction with the audience because it's a sweaty dance floor on a pounding sound system. At the same time, when I get to, you know, sit at home composing and I hear everything in my head finished, and I'm just at the piano, you know, that's an amazing thing too. So yeah, I feel very grateful that there are different ways I can get that creative fix and express myself.
Did you have to work on easily floating between these roles, or was it something that came natural to you?
I think they're all the same, to be honest.
Yeah, what way?
They're kind of variations on a theme, where the theme is the same throughout. All of them are about expressing through music. So whether it's, if I'm composing, then the process is a little, like it's slowed down a bit. But if I'm doing a live club set and programming beats and remixing live, then it's the same process, but it's much faster. And I don't get to kind of, if there's a mistake, I've got to shape that into something else, which is fun. But if I'm composing, I make a mistake, I'll just change it. So there's a difference in that respect, but I do feel like essentially it's all the same thing. For me, actually composing in a more traditional sense, I feel like I've reconnected with that recently, which may seem weird to say considering how much music I make, but actually, you know, sitting down, writing out horn parts and like creating music for a band context, that's something I really enjoy getting back to.
So let's listen to another one of your favorite tracks.
Let's go, we're kind of jumping forward in chronology, which is nice. So let's go to Detroit. Moody Man's a huge favorite of mine. He has a uncanny way of combining the dark urban feeling of a place like Detroit with a really interesting musicality. So yeah, Black Mahogany, Moody Man. Thank you.
I heard you talking a little earlier about this party that you have, and it it sounds like a very interesting concept, but also kind of challenging, since people are not really used to moving around between the different scenes, you know. And that's something that I've also experienced here in Stockholm, that you know, here we're sitting in Jazz Club Fasching, there's a certain clique of people who come to the live shows, and then there's a certain group of people who go to the clubs. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about how that the idea for this club concept, Church, was born?
Well, Church came together. I'd moved to LA from London, and I wanted to do something live regularly. And I'd been doing a party in London called Free Soul Sessions, which is like a improvised broken beat club night. And I didn't feel like I could do that in LA, because that was such a London-centric thing. So it had to be something new. And most of all, what I wanted to do is I wanted to share my whole experience and journey as a musician with people. Growing up as a jazz musician, getting into beats, getting into hip-hop, house, breaks, club stuff. So I wanted to share that. And I mean, that's pretty much how the concept came together. So we'd start the night playing really straight ahead jazz, and over two sets it would morph into this full-on electronic, very housey, breaky club night.
And what people did you find coming to the club?
Well, we got a really wide range of people, but the beauty was we saw the dancers would come down early and see the jazz set, and the jazz heads would stay late and see it morph into the dance club. So both kinds of people would see the continuity and the flow and the transition, and the, most importantly, the relationship between the genres. And for me, it was really important, it's always been important, to share with people the idea of no boundaries and how interrelated everything is. I mean, especially today where, you know, genres are defined by BPM, and it's just ridiculous to me. Totally ludicrous. So to break that mentality and to share the oneness of it all with people has been really great. And then musicians as well have tripped out on that, where I'll book kind of more of a jazz musician to play with me, and they see it morph, and then I end up sampling them and flipping that, and it becomes something else, and there's like a couple hundred people dancing and capoeira people getting down, and it's crazy. And so that's pretty much what Church has become. And people come along and they're like, oh, now I see why you call it Church. And it's, you know, it's never been about a religious thing. It's about the idea of, you know, celebrating being alive and uplifting the spirit through music. And, you know, that's why it's Church.
All right, so let's round this talk off with something that could exemplify the spirit of that club night.
So a track that definitely catches the vibe would be, I mean, it's a club classic now, which is over 10 years old, but it samples a Wynton Marsalis tune called Skene's Domain, and the tune is Hot Music, Soho. It's funny, like whenever a DJ drops this joint in any club anywhere in the world, in any setting, it just smashes it up. And it's amazing where you know, he took like a, Pal Joey took a one or two bar loop off a Wynton Marsalis record and a few samples off a few other things and added some crazy drums. And it's a club classic, but that definitely captures the vibe.
Lovely. Thanks a lot, Mark. It's been a pleasure meeting you and talking to you.
Thank you very much.